This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Hello, everybody. I hope you're having a nice evening. I hope you're all enjoying your sandwiches and cake. Thank you for coming. I'd like to introduce our first delightful act of the evening, which will be John Hawkes Reid, and he will explain to you how to program a loom, was it a loom-powered, loom-coded, cardboard-powered, steam, loom-coded, steam-powered. It's some kind of killer elephant, right? And John is going to tell you all about it. So I will give him the microphone.
Hello. Right. Jacquard control devices that power steam elephants, or rather control steam elephants. Steam elephant, elephant driven by steam. You need some kind of fairly complex control system to keep the legs working in the right order. Saw. Jacquard looms. Fairly familiar with their operation? Excellent. This solves an awful lot of problems. Also bizarrely similar to fairground organs, which is similarly convenient and will come up later. In fact, exactly this later. Here I have a demonstration version of a fairground organ, which is quite small, thankfully, because the full-size ones are full-size. Were you of an inquiring mind, you'd be wondering now, what happens if I put the music in upside down? So, this is what we find. Upside down. So we're safe. Blast. So, that's how you hack that control system. Play it backwards, muck around with it. I have a pile of blank ones. And I have a punch. However, you've got a Jacquard rig, you've got a large mill, you've got a capitalist mill owner. The first thing, second thing they're going to think after profit is underpants. No way. Why can't we build a really big Jacquard rig that drives the entire factory? Then all you need is small children to keep the mice out of the grunge wheels, and you can just bribe your way into a seat in Parliament, and everything is lovely. And that's pretty much what happened. So I'm going to have to read my notes a little bit. The first Jacquard 3 installation, which was the size of a small village, because they are quite complicated, was a sheet metal works in Smethwick, owned by a J. Peasmould Gruntfuttock. Long-term membership of the local Masonic Lodge and a sequence of backhanders to Rowley Regis Corporation, Gruntfuttock was able to secure a contract to supply steamer trunks to the War Department, and it looked something like that, which sadly you can't see at the back, but assume, if you will, a thing about the size of the village where I grew up with... Good heavens, stick it on the pit, but it's further away. No, it's staying there, I feel safe. I'm near a computer, it's okay. Now, at that point in history, an absolutely vital part of an officer's kit was the demountable wardrobe. And I'm actually not making that up because I've got my grandfather's and it's an amazing piece of kit. I quote, a sturdy wooden brass-bound affair that knocked down into three sections for easy transport. Now, what you needed around that for transport between Sandhurst and the battlefield, or Sandhurst and different part of Sandhurst, is a steamer trunk. And that's what Gruntfuttock was building in his Jacquard-controlled establishment. So the comparatively low number of fatalities per month made him a household name as far afield as Tipton. Now, weirdly, this business came to the attention of the Royal Steam Research Establishment at Malvern, RSRE, I'm fairly sure S is steam, not signals, no, who dispatched a Captain Augustus Henge to inspect Gruntfuttock's establishment with a view to building what in later years we would call the Narfi. Henge's idea was that if he shrunk the standard 3-acre Jacquard site into something the size of perhaps a small Pantechnicon or even a standard GWR wagon, he could deliver a Narfi anywhere in the Empire within 3 weeks, which later was stolen by the goons. So within the space of 10 years, the operation of the officers' morale and the enlisted men's morale were both given over to large Jacquard installations. This caused consternation in Manchester because they thought themselves a go-ahead organisation, but they had no Jacquard installations of their own. And in a meeting at the Lesser Free Trade Hall, run by Mr. Lydon, there was a small but enthusiastic audience. The first Jacquard factory in Manchester was run by Mr. A. H. Wilson. Works, which was named the factory, was in a dance hall, and he built boats. Although the factory never actually made any money, the number of people who said they were at that meeting at the Lesser Free Trade Hall in Manchester watching Mr. Lydon grew year on year. That's a punk joke. And with, again, the onward march of technology meant that the Jacquard 7 finally would fit inside one of Gruntfuttock's original steamer trunks. So, which leads me on to that. That's a Hughes. It is a steam organ. The input side, as I've demonstrated, of the Jacquard 7 bears startling similarities to the Wurlitzer 164, which is an American-designed fairground organ, which is driven by air pressure, in as much as Wurlitzer is vacuum-driven, such that when there's a hole that passes over the mechanism, air is let into the relevant pipe, which drives a valve which makes a horrible racket, or doesn't make a horrible racket. In the Elephant, that drives the hydraulic system, so rather than a tambourine or a terrible racket, you get an elephant waving its leg, or hopefully not falling over. So the interesting, vaguely thing about that is that in that picture, which you can't really see, there is a stack of concertinaed up organ books, that they call them, which are the instructions for the tunes. These things are a right faff because they have to be made out of cartridge paper. They don't last very long. If you do it with concertinaed cardboard, they can basically be bomb-proof, and it doesn't matter if it gets a bit damp. So, what we have now is a steam elephant run by a small industrial computing system, which is derived from a music box. You can probably guess what happened next. Some bright fellow decided it would be really funny to run Jerusalem through a steam elephant. That is the picture of the remains. I quote, "Once the dust had settled, it only took a team of Navi a week to remove the worst of the debris." And I quote again, "The post-mortem concluded that this sort of thing was bound to happen and put the entire incident down to youthful high spirits." Weirdly coincidentally, there was an attempt on the Wurlitzer land speed record in the 50s where a team of English chaps and one Welsh person tried to drive a 50-ton cinema organ at speed across down Pendine Sands using the Jacquard 9 from a Bristol Blunderbuss missile control system and a Rolls Meteor tank engine from a Nuffield Tortoise. Yes, I am a silly twisted boy. Well played. The audio recording is well worth digging out. You can probably find it on the internet. And further towards our own timeline, a Dr. Tibulus McCavitron, a professor of automatic music, rediscovered a cache of these organ books at INRIA, which is the French government computer research establishment. They were labelled as coming from, and I quote, "Groupe de Recherche de Musique Concrète." Ah, yes, the French Society for Filthy Rackets. And anybody who bothered to dust off a Wurlitzer mechanism and lace up the things instantly decided that they were part of a willfully intransigent experiment into serial music by somebody who considered Karlheinz Stockhausen far too much in the thrall of melodic tradition. We actually know these are the surviving set of elephant control system cards, not music at all. However, we think they were mislabeled on purpose during one war or another, probably. But the origin of the Jacquard rig as being a fairground thing was never actually made public until there was a moderately terrible accident just outside Malvern Wells involving a column of steam elephants and a showman's tractor. When the bits had been cleared up, there was enough left over that there were several excitable letters written to and fro in 2 and 6, which is the Jacquard Hackers quarterly magazine. It worked in my bedroom. So the research group at the Industrial Automation Group at Clarendon Labs in Oxford were interested in trying to crack a Jacquard 7. So the first thing they did on discovering this was travel to Tewkesbury Mop Fair and thieve a Wurlitzer 164. And I quote from the document at the time, since this appeared to be no more than the usual set of drunken toffs stealing the bread from honest working men's mouths, it was put down to youthful high spirits, and the perpetrators were fined for their trouble at Gloucester Assizes. However, they had managed to work out that at each end of a Wurlitzer reed head, there are a bunch of spare slots which were used on the Wurlitzer, for instance, turning lights on and off, and indeed making the automatic band leader's head revolve in a disturbing manner. On a Jacquard, these were not set up, so behaviour would be undefined. So they had to find some way of testing what they were about to try. There was a Jacquard 6 installation at the university, but the industrial automation team were not allowed anywhere near it because they were a bunch of sods and might do anything terrible. So what they did was have a bit of a think. And about 6 weeks after the think, in the snug bar of the Lamb and Flag, a delegation of Canadian industrialists arrived at the Jacquard Works for an impromptu tour. Since they arrived unannounced, there wasn't time to send a telegram to the Canadian High Commission to find out who the devil they were. So the chap in charge of the works, a Dr. Osric Pureheart, took it upon himself to escort the visitors himself. They were fascinated by every part of the works and spent an awfully long time chatting to anybody who they could find, and drove Dr. Pureheart to distraction, so much so that he managed to lose one of them, which is kind of what you'd expect when somebody has a spare Wurlitzer roll in their back pocket. And the results were entirely unsurprising. That is a picture of another explosion, which took a small team of navvies only half a week to remove the worst of the damage. The core team were disturbed by this eventuality because it was not quite what they planned, and several weeks after that, by a complete stroke of luck, a column of elephants broke down near Kingston Bagpews, which is just outside Oxford. And indeed, the Lamb and Flag in Kingston Bagpews was the last pub that the Industrial Automation Group hadn't been thrown out of. So they invited the squaddies left to guard the dead elephant in for a swift pint or seven, and tried as a last attempt to crack the Jacquard controller by substituting two of the most vital cards for, a quote again, 32 bars from Handel Solomon, specifically the arrival of the Queen of Sheba. And this was the result. And that's how you hack a steam elephant.
Thanks, John, and thanks everybody for coming. It's lovely to see you all. I don't know if everybody picked up on the internet the schedule of entertainments for this evening, but we now have a kind of a 10-minute grace period before the latecomers are allowed in, and that's at 8:30. And then following that, there will be a couple of dramatic presentations, one of Joe's story, Brass and Bone, and one of Pete's story from the anthology called Artifice Perdu. And then later on, there will be the band, and after the band, we'll have the cosplay contest. So if you are interested in taking part in the cosplay contest, make yourself known to Joe and myself. And if you're not going to be around for kind of 10:15-ish, let us know so that we can make sure that you don't miss out. And thanks again, everybody, and have a lovely evening.
This reading took place at the Airship Ball, which we held at the Folk House in Bristol. The ball was in celebration of the launch of the book Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion, an anthology of steampunk stories set in Bristol, published by Wizard's Tower Press with the collaboration of the Bristol Con Foundation.